You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. We got a lot of great stuff to talk about on the show, so I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining right now. Before we get started, I just can't go on without complimenting this weather that we've been having, this great weather. The sun is shining, clouds are in the sky. Pretty soon we'll be looking up, the ladies will be in sundresses, guys will be out there with the shorts and the flip-flops on and the tanks. Man, it's an exciting time. And we got spring that's right around the corner, coming up on the 20th of this month. And don't forget, daylight savings time is coming up on the 14th. So don't forget to set those clocks an hour ahead of time on Sunday. So now that we've got that out the way, let's jump into the topics. First off, let's go to the NBA. So we had a signing that just went down this past week with the Brooklyn Nets and Blake Griffin. Yes, Blake Griffin will sign with the Brooklyn Nets. He will be signing a veteran minimum deal with the Brooklyn Nets after his contract was bought out by the Detroit Pistons. So let's look at this situation here. Is this a good or a bad move by the Brooklyn Nets? If you ask me, I think that this is a good move. I really do. I love the move with Brooklyn getting Blake Griffin. Now, let's just give the timeline on this real quick. So initially, when the news broke that Blake Griffin was no longer wanting to be in Detroit, and they pretty much started, they set him. They set him down. He had already been plagued by injuries over the years. They set him down until stuff was figured out. So they came to an agreement to buy him out, so on and so forth. And then there were some teams that were emerging as potential places that Blake Griffin could land. So there were the Nets, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, the Heat, and the Blazers. Those were the teams that were interested. So Blake was actually owed a remaining $36.6 million this season and $39 million in 2021 and 2022 prior to the buyout. So as I stated before, injuries have been an issue over the years with Blake, which has taken away some of his athleticism. He was averaging 12 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. And that's under his career average of 21, 8, and 4 in his last full season. So his last full season that he was actually playing, he was actually averaging 24 points per game for a while. But again, even then, even though that athleticism has dropped off, even though he's been plagued over the years with injuries, even though we hadn't seen him really dunk, we hadn't seen him dunk the basketball in 2 years. Let's just be honest. We have not seen Blake Griffin jumping out of the gym like he was in LA when he was with the Clippers. When he first came into the league those first few years, it was just like, oh my God. But he does bring something to the table for Brooklyn. Those things are size, toughness, and he has that motivation. That motivation is going to be what drives him to step up and play well for Brooklyn. You know, again, people are doubting him right now. I'm pretty sure he's been paying attention to the media and listening to the different things that are coming out about how, like what I just said, he hadn't dunked the ball in 2 years. He's not really that great shooting right now at this point in his career with those injuries and that athleticism pretty much taking a step back. But the Nets needed more size and they needed an extra body. So I think when you put Blake Griffin and insert him in this lineup, and I don't think he's going to be starting, obviously. I think you bring him off the bench. If you're Steve Nash, you incorporate him into your lineup, and he's going to be a great asset to this team. I'm not saying that, yeah, he's going to go out here and put up double-doubles in this every single night, but Blake Griffin's not a guy that's going to back down from anybody. He's a tough player. He can defend. He can shoot the ball. I'm pretty sure he still has somewhat of a shot. So it's a good move. It's a really good move. Especially with teams, let's think about this now. With teams having to prioritize their attention towards Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and KD, it's going to create more opportunities for Blake Griffin in the paint. Just think about that. Teams are going to have to pay attention to Kyrie, Harden, and KD I'm pretty sure they're going to try to do some trap situations on whatever they do. That's not going to work. Let's just be honest. It's not going to work. And that'll open up the door for Blake to have those big nights some nights. Again, not every single night, but he can have pretty solid nights. He has the capability of getting a double-double. So when you look at potential, you know, lineups and stuff and how Steve Nash is going to pretty much figure this thing out, the great thing about Blake Griffin is he doesn't have to be the number one option. He doesn't have to be the number two option. He doesn't have to be the number three option. And he really doesn't even have to be the number four, to be honest with you. He could be the fifth option. Again, like I mentioned, he's coming off the bench. Potential lineups you get that could be on the floor at the same time. You have Kyrie, Harden, KD, Jeff Green, and you could throw in Blake in that lineup. Or you can have their big three, Kyrie, Harden, KD, Joe Harris out there, and Blake. You know, you could do something like that. Move KD to the four. Blake could play the five. Joe Harris could play the three. You can do different things. You can get creative with this. And again, let's not forget about DeAndre Jordan as well. DeAndre Jordan is a guy who was a teammate of Blake Griffin in LA. So again, they're building size, which is what they were missing. I like when they got DeAndre Jordan, that was good for their size, and now they're bringing in Blake Griffin. That's going to help them. It's really going to help them. And I think people, once they actually see this stuff unfold, it'll start to make sense. Again, let's go back to when the Nets first got together. People were questioning, oh, can this work? Well, yeah, we haven't seen all three with Kyrie, Harden, and KD on the court for a very extended amount of time. We have not seen that yet. But as it currently stands, they have the second best record in the East. So something's going right. When KD comes back, when he finally comes back, I do think that, again, I've been saying this whole time. I think that these three guys are going to figure this thing out, and they're going to continue to get better. From the beginning, I said if they can figure this out, which I believe that they can, they'll be right there. And here we are. Whenever KD comes back, I think they are going to be just fine. And you know what? Before I go into my next topic, I want to address something. I get tired of this narrative that's been going around about, oh, these teams are, you know, Brooklyn's loading up all these players just to beat LeBron. Stop. Okay. I'm going to stop you right there. We need to stop with this whole narrative. First and foremost, let's not act like, and again, I don't dislike LeBron, any of that. We're not about to sit up here and act like LeBron didn't go to Miami with Dwayne Wade, with Chris Bosh, with Ray Allen. And don't tell me Ray Allen was old, because he was still shooting lights out from the three-point line. We're not going to sit up here and act like LeBron didn't go there because he wanted to win. It was okay for him to leave Cleveland and go there when he wanted to get his rings. But now everybody's, oh, KD's doing this. He's jumping here to go. He's going to Golden State to win. Now the Brooklyn Nets are getting, they're getting KD, and they're getting James Harden, and they're getting Blake Griffin. And this is all, they're just loading up to try to beat LeBron. Okay. I don't think that they're loading up to just beat LeBron. I think they're loading up to beat other teams as well. This is not all about LeBron James. Everybody loves to, oh, they're doing this because LeBron is doing this, da, 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 da. No, stop. Stop. Cut it out. We need to stop getting upset about these teams building super teams. We just have to. This has been happening. We know what era we're in. This is not the era with the Larry Bird and Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas. This isn't that era anymore. This has been happening, and it's going to continue to happen. So people need to get used to that. It was okay. Again, it was cool when LeBron got up there and stretched this thing out for a week, and we had like an entire week of ESPN special about what team was LeBron going to pick. He stretched it out for an entire week. I know y'all remember that. Stretched it out for a whole week. I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. This is going to be lit. Bronze down in South Beach. It is cool. It's cool then. But now, fast forward years later, now when teams are taking, other players are taking, you know, that type of formula, like, you know, I want to win a ring too. He did it. Why can't I do it? What's there to be upset about? It's going to keep happening. That's just the era that we're in. And until that era changes, I don't even know if we would ever go back to the way that it was when there was genuine dislike for between superstars on that competitive level, where they don't want to join up. Giannis is really the only guy that I see right now. He's like, I don't want to go join up with anybody else. Giannis and, you know, Bradley Beal doesn't want to go play anywhere. He clearly showed that when he wanted to stay in Washington. So there are certain players that are still out there like that from that competitive standpoint of, you know, I want to play against the best. If you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. And then there's other players like, you know what, I've been in the league for a while. I want to win. Again, it happens. It's going to continue to happen. Let it go. So moving on. Again, this is a topic that, I've been tired of talking about it, been tired of hearing about it, but I'm glad that it's finally coming to a rest. It has finally reached a resolution, and that is Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. Finally. I was actually shocked. I did not think that the Cowboys, I didn't think Jerry Jones was going to be able to reach a deal with Dak Prescott. I did not. And on the final day before the deadline for them to reach a long-term deal before franchise tagging them, they got it done. They actually got this thing done. Again, I was shocked. I have been on the record saying that there was not going to be a deal done. So they proved me wrong, but they definitely did it in the final hour on the last day. They did target March 9th as the day that they wanted to do it, and they actually accomplished that. So let's look at the details of this deal with Dak Prescott. So he signed a four-year, $160 million deal with a max value of $164 million. So again, he got his four-year deal. Dak actually ended up winning in the end versus Jerry Jones, who wanted that five-year deal. So he's going to get $126 million guaranteed, and he's going to be averaging $42 million a year over the first three seasons with $75 million in the first season and a $66 million signing bonus. Wow. What a contract. Dak got paid. So, again, when we were looking at this situation a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a lot of people were like, you know what, Dak isn't going to be able to get this deal. You know, I didn't think that he would. But then you started to see that leverage build up. I mentioned this last week about Dak's leverage that he had, that leverage that was continuing to grow the longer that Jerry Jones took to get this deal done. Again, I mentioned that first franchise tag that Dak Prescott endured last year, that was 15% of the league-wide salary cap. If they were to franchise tag him again, if you recall last week, that means it would have increased 5% to 20% of the league-wide salary cap, which they agreed on $182 million for the salary cap around the league. So that was going to have a financial obligation on Dallas. And Jerry Jones looked at that situation and he's like, you know what, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to get into a financial hardship and have to dig myself out of it. So that leverage again, let's mention that leverage again that Dak Prescott had. So he was on pace to break the all-time single-season passing record that was held by Peyton Manning, of 5,477 yards before he broke his ankle in week five. He was completing a career-high 68% of his passes. He was averaging 422 yards passing per game, and the Cowboys averaged 31.5 points per game with him. Now, without Dak, they only averaged 204 passing yards a game and 21 points. So, since Dak has actually gotten his deal done, now there's been word around the league about the fans and, you know, the Jerry Jones general manager, that after Dak finally got this deal, now it is Super Bowl or bust for the Dallas Cowboys. Super Bowl or bust. So is it fair to say Super Bowl or bust after they reach this huge deal? I do think that any time that you pay a player as much as that got paid, you do get into that Super Bowl or bust mode, because you're only paying your player with the intent, with the belief that he's going to get you there, that you have what it takes to get there, and that now that both sides have come to a mutual agreement, now it's Super Bowl or bust. Is that fair? In a sense, I get the logic of it by saying we paid you this money, get us there. But no, it's not fair. When you look at the Cowboys' issues that they have, let's not forget about the issues that this team has gone through this past year in 2020. They still have some issues to address. This is not a Super Bowl ready team right now, despite having Dak, Zeke, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb. Despite all of that, there's still some issues. This team started 1-3 last year, finished 6-10, no playoffs, and they finished third in the worst division in football last year. The worst division in football, the NFC East, they finished third. Now let's talk about some of these issues that the Cowboys had. The defense, first and foremost. They had identity issues last year. Entering week 5, they were allowing 38 points per game. And the only other roster in Cowboys history to do that, the second roster to do that in Cowboys history, was in 1960, which was an expansion team of the Cowboys. And they went 0-11-1. Do you see that? That's insane. They were also allowing, they allowed 146 points in their first four games. And we're talking about a defense that was led by Mike McCarthy. You know, they got rid of Jason Garrett. All the Cowboys fans were like, oh my God, finally, Jason Garrett's gone. Not so fast. Mike McCarthy comes in from Green Bay. And now they're setting records in a negative way on the defensive end. I'm not saying Jason Garrett was better, but I mean, this is the first team, like I just mentioned before, this only the second roster in Dallas Cowboys franchise history to allow 38 points per game. And the second team, the other team that did it, didn't even win a football game. They didn't even win a game. Mike McCarthy struggled. Let's talk about the offense. So the offense was actually a turnover machine in 2020. They were a turnover machine. They forced that defense to be on the field a lot. They consistently lost time of possession against their opponents. And let's talk about Zeke. He actually led running backs in fumbles. He had 6 fumbles last year. Finished just under 1,000 yards rushing at 979. Only had 6 touchdowns, which is tied for 23rd in the league. And he only averaged 4 yards a carry, which is 41st in the league. That's not going to get it done. Their offensive line gave up 44 sacks. Now, I get it. They had injuries on the offense and the defensive side. But all teams do. All teams have injuries. That's no excuse. You got to make your adjustments. I get it. They had injuries. But that still doesn't negate the fact that this team has issues. They are not Super Bowl ready right now. They're not. We'll see what they do in the draft. We'll see how they address their issues at the safety position in free agency, if they're able to do that. how are they going to address their offensive line issues? Who are they going to get in free agency to help come in and protect Dak Prescott? Because, yeah, you signed Dak to this huge deal, but if you can't protect him, it doesn't mean anything. So are they going to go out there and get another guy at the wide receiver position that can really help bolster the offense even more? What is Jerry Jones going to do? We will see. But no, it's not fair to say Super Bowl right now because they're not ready. So before we go into our next topic, just going to take a quick pause in the action and just let you know you're listening to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson, the second, give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. You can actually follow my podcast page on Instagram at Lace Up Podcast. Again, follow on Instagram at Lace Up Podcast. That's LACEUP Podcast on Instagram. I'll be posting different things periodically throughout the week, different things to get you guys engaged. So make sure you go follow that. Tell a friend to tell a friend and support me. I appreciate that. You know, it's all love. I always appreciate as much support, any feedback as possible. So let's jump back into things right now. So we're going to go back to the NBA. So things have gotten interesting in the MVP race, people. Joel Embiid has officially passed LeBron as the MVP favorite. This is interesting. These are my thoughts on this. You know, Joel Embiid, I said this before, man. He was emerging as that guy who should be, you know, that MVP favorite. Currently, the 76ers are first in the East and they're third in the NBA. They have the third best record in the NBA. Joel Embiid has become the consensus favorite to win MVP, according to sportsbooks around the nation. He's listed as plus 200 to win at Caesars Sportsbook, with LeBron at plus 225. So he actually opened this year at 40-1 odds to win MVP. But since then, Joel Embiid has been averaging 30 points a game and 11 rebounds per game. He's actually, check this out now, he's actually on pace to join Steph Curry as the only players to average 30 on 50% shooting and 40% on three-pointers in a season. That's some great company to be a part of, if you ask me. Embiid and Curry in the same category? Who would have thought that? So he's actually looking to become the first center to win MVP since Shaquille O'Neal in 2000. And again, man, I've been telling y'all, Joel Embiid has been balling. The only thing that I question is, can he stay healthy throughout the season? And so far he has been. Now, with NBA action returning, he is going to be out of the starting lineup alongside Ben Simmons with their recent COVID contact that they came in with the barber who had COVID right before the All-Star game. So they were forced to sit out of the All-Star game, actually. So with the COVID protocols in the NBA, they have to sit out as of right now. I want to say it was a couple games. But he's looking to become the first center since Shaq in 2000 to win MVP. That's great company to be a part of. That's great company to be a part of. Let me just tell you, let's look at the types of games. If you question why Joel Embiid is a front runner right now, let's look at the games that he's had. Let's just look at them. 38-8, 45-16, 42-10, 38-11, 33-14, 37-11, 34-11, 25-17, 31-11, 50-17, 42-13, 40-19. You cannot sit up here and tell me those are not MVP numbers. He is dominating in the paint. He is dominating. There's no way around it. You cannot get around giving him credit for what he's been able to do. A guy who has had his toughness questioned at times. They questioned not if he cared. They said he was lazy. You know, we've all seen it. You know, one night he could give you 40 and 10, and another night he might only put up 5 points in the past. But since then, he's taken that all in. He's elevated himself, and he's looking at himself like, you know what? I'm a beast. Let me act as such. Let me act like the beast that I am. And I think this is right. It's correct. He should be front runner to win the MVP right now. Now LeBron is behind him, but obviously his MVP numbers, well, I want to say his chances to get MVP are starting to decrease. They're starting to dwindle down. You know, Anthony Davis hasn't been there. And, you know, he's struggled. They have won some games, but as far as like individual wise, you know, he has struggled with keeping up to be that front runner in that MVP race. So Joel Embiid, with him being as consistent as he's been, with having a healthy team and being able to continue to win like they have, I don't think without Joel Embiid, they're the number one team in the East, third best record in the NBA. I don't think that without Joel Embiid, there's no chance. They could compete somewhat, but Joel Embiid is the glue that makes this team mesh the way that they do. That helps take them to the level that they've been able to reach so far this season. Now, as we go in the second half of this season, and as we go on, we'll see if that could continue. We'll see if he can take it to a whole nother level. Can he continue to dominate like he's been doing? He has capability of doing this. Again, the only thing that I've ever questioned is the health side of it. He has to be healthy. They have to watch how much they're asking of him at times. Will they have to implement some type of load management in certain situations? I'm pretty sure they will, especially when you start getting halfway through the second half of the season. And if you start to have locked up that number one seed, if things are starting to look, you know, in your favor and you pretty much don't have anything else to worry about, you know, you do want to start periodically resting the guy, let him get his body intact and ready to go for when we hit this when you hit the playoffs and it's time to lace up. I know I'm lame, y'all. I know I am. I had to say it. Oh my gosh, man. But yeah, when it's time to get ready for playoff time, and they want him to be at 100% or as close to 100% as possible. I say you want Joel Embiid to at least be 85 to 90%, if not 100%, because I know nobody's really at 100% by the time the season ended. With, you know, just all the contact that you've taken throughout that half of the season, and you know, going right into the playoffs, you know, who's really at 100%? So yeah, I think it's right to have Joel up there as the front runner. So next up, let's talk about the conference tournaments that are going on right now. Actually, as I record, as you listen to me, they're going on right now. So I'm going to just give you my pick for the conference tournament winners. My predictions of who's going to win the Power 5 conference tournaments. And then we'll go into teams that have punched their ticket already, who've already actually won their tournaments. And then I'll give you a few early tournament predictions as we are now 3 days after, if you don't count today, we're 2 days away from Selection Sunday, where we officially know the round of 64. We'll have majority of the 64, because you know you had the two play-in games. So we'll have 62 teams picked And then I want to say those two play-in games, that'll be your next two teams that'll be to make the round of 64. And don't sleep on those play-in games either. Those play-in games are actually pretty interesting. I always watch them every year, and they usually will come down to the wire. So if you have a chance, make sure you pay attention to those as well. So let's look at the conference tournament. So in ACC, I'm going to go with Florida State. I think Florida State will win that tournament. In the Big Ten, I'm going with Illinois. Illinois has been balling out of control. I know you got Michigan in there, Ohio State. Iowa is a team. They have the most teams in the top 10 rankings right now. And I want to say in the top 25 as well. In the Big 12, I'm going to go with Baylor. The Pac-12, I'm going to go with Oregon. And y'all already know who I'm going with in the SEC. Do I have to say it? Of course I have to say it. Alabama. Roll Tide. You know I'm rocking with Bama to get this thing done, man, and punch that ticket. I mean, the ticket's already, they're already in. But they have an opportunity to get a number one seed if they run through this tournament and let's say one of the other projected number one seeds loses. They have a path to get a number one seed. They're currently a number two seed at the moment. But again, those are my teams. Again, Florida State in the ACC, Illinois in the Big Ten, Baylor in the Big 12, Oregon in the Pac-12, and Alabama in the SEC. So there are five teams that have already punched their ticket to the tournament. Those teams are Utah State, Belmont, Winthrop, Bradley, and Liberty. So again, those are five teams that have won their conference tournaments. They've officially punched their ticket, and now they're just looking to see who they're going to be playing in the first round. So as these tournaments continue to go on throughout today, the rest of the week, the rest of this weekend leading into Sunday, it's going to be exciting to see who actually gets in. So I'm going to give you guys some early predictions that bold predictions is what I'm going to call. These are just early tournament bold predictions. So my first bold prediction is a number one seed will get upset in the first two rounds. So whether that's a 16 beating a one or in the next round, a number one seed will get upset. There was a 16 that beat a one back in 2018. Yes, it was 2018 tournament. That was the first time it actually happened. So my second bold prediction, there will be a Cinderella story this year. There will be a Cinderella story team. I don't know who that team is yet. Next week, I'll tell you how I'm feeling. I'll tell you who I think is going to be that Cinderella story team. But there will be a Cinderella story. There's always somewhat of a Cinderella story. But I remember the year, I want to say it was Loyola Chicago. They made it pretty far in the tournament as well. They were like that Cinderella story, and it kind of got chopped down, unfortunately. But I love to see the Cinderella stories. And we're going to get another one. I'm predicting that. My third bold prediction, there will be at least six games that will end on a buzzer beater. And you know in March Madness, there's always a game or two that ends in a buzzer beater. I'm going to go with six. I'm going to predict six games, at least six games, will end in a buzzer beater. Fourth bold prediction, a number 16 seed will make it past the second round. Now, this has never been done. Again, a 16 beat a 1 a couple years back, but that seed actually did not advance to the second. They didn't advance past the second round. So I'm going to go with what has never been done yet. That 16 seed is going to make it past the second round. And finally, my boys, Alabama. Y'all know I had to throw a prediction in about Alabama. I mean, come on now. Come on. Bama will reach the Elite Eight for the first time since 2004. Do they have capability of getting to the Elite Eight, getting to a Final Four and a championship? Yes, they do. They do have the capability. They do have the capability with this team that they've that Nate Oates has put together. Yes, they have what it takes to get there. Well, I am gonna predict them to get to the Elite Eight. Of course, I'm rolling with Alabama to hopefully, you know, I want my boys to win it all. For a bold prediction as of right now, I'll give some more bold predictions as the tournament goes on. You know, I'm not gonna give you all of my bold predictions now, but for the first round of bold predictions, like, of course, I'm going to predict my boys to get to the Elite Eight. So Roll Tide, let's get it done. So just real quick about the protocols. So they actually came out and said teams only have to have 5 healthy players to be able to remain in the tournament. that's pretty interesting. So imagine having a team rolling out there with just 5 players against a full squad. That's going to be tough. That playing 5 players the entire game for 2 halves, that's tough. But these are the current protocols. They could change by the time, you know, Sunday hits. But I guess they're saying, you know, 5, because obviously you only need 5 to play on the court. But yeah, that's currently right now they only have to have 5 healthy players. Now there's no protocols implemented yet, as of yet, in regards to head coaches. So if a head coach was to test positive, they don't have anything in place about that. I would assume that whoever assistant coach is would be able to step in the head coach's place. I mean, that's the only logical, change that they can make. If you ask me, I don't see anything else different than that. So, but yeah, that's all I have for you all, man. I appreciate, again, you joining the podcast, giving me a little bit of your time. Just excited, man. March Madness is right around the corner. Start getting those brackets ready. Get ready to fill them out. It's going to be a crazy one. The madness is here. We've already seen some teams win on some buzzer beaters in these conference tournaments, and it's only going to get crazier, people. It's only going to get mad wild in March Madness. Again, appreciate you joining in. Be blessed. Be back same time, same place next week for Lace Up. Peace.